WGN Radio, Craig Bolanos joins us to start today's edition of the Wintrust Business Lunch. He's the co-founder and CEO of Wealth Management Group. You want to start with what Chairman Powell said yesterday, Craig?
Oh, let's talk about a little bit of Fed speak, right? So for JP, as I affectionately call him, it's all been about the three R's. Rates got to go up. We're running off the balance sheet and doing everything we can to reduce aggregate demand. And I guess that's a nice way of saying there is not going to be any form of a Fed pivot. That's the second time I've heard that from him in a short period of time. But given the markets didn't retrace on those words, it shows that a lot of stuff is already baked into the cake. That's good news for investors' 401k plans.
It's funny that when the chairman says something, the world reacts. And here's what I want him to do. Regardless of the impact of raising at 75 basis points or 50 or 100 or what's happening in Europe, just say good things. Just say, it's going up 75, but actually this, you're not even going to feel a thing. We're good. We're solid here. Wouldn't it be nice if you did that, Craig?
You know what? You would be a fantastic speechwriter, not
Hell
just
yeah.
for the Fed, but I think we can put you into the White House. You can do the same thing for both political parties. I would love some clean talk. It would be fantastic. And just so we cover it, since you mentioned the Fed, let's cut to the chase. There was a Wall Street Journal article, better known as a leak, that came out, and there's no question, it's not 50. They're going 75 this month, and the market's A-OK with it.
Are you surprised by that?
No, I'm not, because we've talked before. Remember, John, I only come on your show when markets are trending higher. But here's the bottom line. I don't think our outlook has really deviated all that much. I acknowledge fully that we have slower growth. I am sure the National Economic Bureau of Research will call me and call you, and we'll learn that, yes, we are in a shallow recession once we get into 2023. But markets tend to bottom 6 to 9 months in advance of that. And assuming we have $235 of earnings per share, a P.E. of 18.5, I still think fair value on this market is somewhere around 4,400. And again, that's good news because we're just a shade above 4,000 as you and I are talking today.
Well, I'm hearing people say that 6 months out, some of these things will come home to roost, that it won't be so good. There's a lag and we haven't felt it yet. What do you say about that?
Well, I believe wholeheartedly, and let me make sure I don't mince my words, I do believe the unemployment rate, which is now at 3.7% because the participation rate went up. I do believe the unemployment rate's going to 3.8. It's going to 3.9. I do believe that we're going to have some job loss. That's part of the third R, a reduction in aggregate demand. But I'm referring to the stock market. I do believe the stock market is going to be trading higher despite some of the economic slowdowns because, again, we're not immune. I feel bad, not just for the UK, but for the death of, you know, Elizabeth II, but I feel awful for the new prime minister over there because she's coming in under a test of fire, high energy prices, 10% inflation, and a debt to a GDP that's, you know, on the wrong side of 100. That means all of these problems in developed Europe and emerging markets are going to continue to slow us down, and more of that will come to roost in 2023. But if I know it, that means markets know it, and a lot of it's priced in.
Do you think that the United States' situation right now is better than in most other nations then?
Oh, let's talk geography. I'm not talking about elementary school, naming your states, your countries, and your capitals. I'm talking about people's portfolio. I mean, I'm all into longer term, having a globally diversified multi-asset class portfolio. That has proven to work time and time again. But the reality is, anybody who's allocating right now, strategically or tactically, with these weights of 20, 25, 30, I've even seen as high as 40% into the international market, markets, EM and EFI, then they haven't checked the U.S. dollar and they haven't checked currency. I think people should be much more invested in the United States of America because we are in a better place with more resiliency, primarily because of energy and food, compared to the rest of the world.
I got questions about some individual companies and sectors along those lines. Craig Bolanos is our guest, co-founder and CEO of Wealth Management Group. And as always, maybe not as always, but Craig sounded pretty optimistic in our last segment. I hope that's your accurate read of the situation and not just your disposition, Greg. Craig.
That's a good comment. You know, I try not to look at the world through rose-colored glasses. I think it's always a mix of two things. I think it's history, because let's be sincere, history is a guide. It's probably the only guide we have. And I take history and I combine it with data. And history and data, I think, lead to probabilities much more so than possibilities. And I think it puts us in a decent setup coming off this shallow bear market in a traditional midterm election pattern. So we'll see what happens.
I want to ask you if we've seen the bottom of this market, but do you think we've been close to it? That is, it's not going to go much lower than it is right now?
I know at the end of the day, no one's supposed to call a bottom, but I have to be sincere. You asked a direct question. Yes, I think June 16th, 3666, notice the last three digits, 666, I think that was the bottom in this pattern. I'm being very serious. Now, the truth is, I'm more encouraged on a Friday afternoon because we've been testing. That's not a repeat. That's to emphasize we've been testing that 3,900 level on the S&P, and had we broke it, yeah, I do think we would revisit the bottom, but I don't think we would pierce that. So I feel very good that there's been some strong technical developments with this 50% retracement that occurred, and I think we're okay here. And as a result, I really want investors, if they've taken massive risk-off positions, to make sure they either have a time or a date stamp in the calendar, or they have a plan to systematically re-engage, because I think that's going to be important, not just for the long term, but over the next couple of months.
There's a survey by, I think, Verizon, and it said that a lot of small business owners say they're not better off today than they were a year ago. There's still a lot of worry about inflation in their minds. What do you say to them?
I say to every small business owner, I feel your pain. I run a small business. We are a family office. There are 14 of us, but for every small business owner that the wealth management group represents, I understand how difficult the labor issue has been in this incredibly elusive job market, not to mention, obviously, product and supply chain, which all ties back to energy. So I understand, we certainly empathize and feel that pain, but the consumer has hung in here, and we've talked time and time again on your show on this lunch hour of not betting against the consumer. Now, granted, is the consumer starting to borrow? Yep. Is the consumer starting to rack up some credit cards? Yep. But that's what we do in America. That's what drives our economy.
Yeah, but with higher rates, maybe they will buy less. Maybe they'll have less money to spend. I think that's what these small business owners are talking about.
I think that's right, and it's about what are they spending on. You know, that's been a big part of the inventory challenges and a lot of the larger big box retailers. That's a challenge for the small business environment as well, is people are becoming more selective. They're not necessarily purchasing as much of those high margin prospects. But I believe in the IBO. I believe in the independent business owner. I believe in the entrepreneurial spirit. And this nation's founded on those business owners, and we've gotten it done in the past, and we're going to get through this too. Mark my words.
Natural gas prices are going to bite people in the butt this winter.
I am only happy that I live in the United States of America, because good heavens, if I was overseas, I would be nervous as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs about how I'm going to afford to heat my house and put food on the table at the same time. That is how difficult the problem is overseas. And for everybody in the States, most certainly, I do not disagree at all that the natural gas prices are going to be stiff. There's no doubt. And I think that awareness is going to lead us to this concept where energy as an investment idea remains a very viable place for people to be. And I just think the stock market as a whole, only having a 4.6% weighting to the energy sector, and I think individual investors as well would be wise. I'm not saying run out and buy natural gas futures here, but I do think energy companies need to be a part of people's portfolio.
That's what I was talking about a little while ago, and I said, well, what do you think about how America versus the rest of the world? And you talked about American stocks and companies versus, say, European or other international stocks. But I was just talking about the cost of living and the general health of the economy. As much as we're fretting here, you described England's financials, and it sounded a lot worse. And Lord knows there's parts of Europe that are suffering because of what's been happening in Ukraine. So maybe as dire as things seem to be, I'm not putting on rose-colored glasses here, but it's a lot harder in a lot of other places. Is that true?
It is. I would say it is dire in other places when it comes to energy. I think it was terrible in other places when it came to the food supply. It's gotten better now that we got wheat flowing again. You're right. I am happy and blessed to be having my immediate family of four living in the United States right now, and that's not some comment over patriotism or nationalism. That's just the economic reality of living in the U.S. today versus living on the other side of the pond.
Any one last thing you want to leave us with before I hang up on you, Craig?
Well, I mean, hang up on me softly, John. Have me back on the show. Let's find out if these predictions are right by the end of the year. I just want everybody to stay committed to their ADRs, their allocation, their diversification, their rebalancing protocols, have good security selection, and remember oftentimes that when it seems dark and investors are very negative. By the way, John, investor sentiment is absolutely terrible still. We're at the 25th lowest reading ever for the AAII. That's usually a good indication that relative brighter days are ahead. That's where we close it on a Friday.
Nice to talk to you. Craig Bolanos is the co-founder and CEO of Wealth Management Group. Invest with WMG.com is the website. We'll call you again, Craig. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you, John.
On the Wintrust Business Lunch, thanks for dialing in to WGN Radio. Did you hear John Hansen the other night? He was talking about rents in Chicago. You knew that the maybe housing stock is a little depleted these days, but there are so few new or sufficient units to rent that people are getting above ask on rentals rather than driving the landlord down. Some people are paying $200, $300, $500 more than they were asking on the rent side as well. How about that? Laura Ellis joins us now, Executive Vice President and President of Residential Sales at Baird & Warner. Let's talk about that, Laura. Is the housing stock all across the board still tight in the Chicago area?
Yes, and thank you for having me, by the way. But yes, the housing inventory, houses for sale, houses for rent are at historical lows. We continue to see, you know, increased demand in just about every market that we serve in the Chicago metropolitan area. And it unfortunately is having the effect that you mentioned, which is driving rental prices up steeply.
When's that going to change? Is this all related to the supply chain? Or you'd think that maybe the pandemic started long enough ago that some of these things would have dissipated. What's driving this?
Well, I think that there's a number of factors, and if we go way back, it's been a long time now, to the what we refer to as the Great Recession, you know, 2008 through really about 2012, there was very little to no building and new housing being created during those years, and so that put us at a deficit to start with. That's even, you know, before we ever had to deal with the pandemic. Then the pandemic comes along, and it really alters the way we live. As we know, many people have the ability to work from home or work part of the time from home. People are spending more time in their homes. They felt they had more flexibility, and they do, for where they live. So I think those two driving factors, you know, we started out with fewer homes than we needed. We were heading in that direction anyway, and the pandemic only accelerated it. The forecast is, you know, for the foreseeable future, we're going to have a shortfall in housing inventory. The low interest rates that we had for a very, very long time also fueled demand. And the last few years were, certainly coming out of that pandemic, as unemployment came way down and the, you know, wages were driven up, that improved affordability for people. So we have a whole combination of factors here that I really contributed to the current state. Now, to your question about where are we going with this? Well, because the interest rates have been so steeply raised recently, you know, we're right around just under 6% to just above 6% right now due to these increases, it is slowing demand somewhat. And so what we're seeing is that the rate of appreciation is starting to level off, and we're starting to see more inventory on the market taking a little bit more time to sell than that of 6 months ago or even last year. So I do think the market is moderating. Some people say it's normalizing. However, in my opinion, over the 25 years plus that I've been in the market, we've never seen anything like this. Hmm. So it is still a very strong market, and it's going to take some time for it to truly normalize.
I was talking to an agent the other day, not one of yours, but a real estate agent still, and he was frustrated that he just doesn't have enough inventory to show that people may come to him. But if that's industry wide, that must be very frustrating for you and your team.
It absolutely is. This year our number of units, the number of properties that are sold, is down steeply from last year. Market wide, we're looking about a 20% reduction in the number of properties we're able to sell this year. And that's not because buyers aren't in the market. It's because we don't have the houses to sell them. If we had the inventory, we would be repeating another year like last year.
Last year was good. Yeah,
last year was just off the charts.
Huh. Well, speaking of normalizing, I mean, nobody wants to take a 20% haircut, and that sounds like that's what you have to take out of the gate. I mean, if there's just that much less inventory to sell. But I wonder if, in fact, where we are this year tracks better with, say, 2018 and 2019.
That's exactly right. And we're looking at the numbers each month, comparing them back to 2018, 2019. 2020 and 2021 were just so abnormal. And we have experienced market shifts that we've never seen before. When the pandemic happened and we locked down, we had a couple of months where the industry was at about a 50% year over year in the number of properties sold. And then we came out of it so quickly and had just an insanely active second half of 2020 that we didn't think we'd repeat. And then, of course, 2021 was even better. And then this year, so it's been a real roller coaster ride, John.
Laura Ellis is the president of residential sales at Baird and Warner. So what advice do you have for people right now? That is, they're thinking, maybe I would sell, I could get top dollar, but shoot, interest rates are high, so maybe people aren't going to have the money to spend and I'm going to have to sell for less. If you could sell your home right now, would you?
I would. And I'm not saying that just because it's I have a bias and I'm in the real estate industry. But what I would say to you is that primarily, and this is the advice we give our customers and our clients on a daily basis, real estate is driven primarily by people's lives, changes in their lives. People get married, they get divorced, they have children. Unfortunately, people pass away. A lot of these things are the drivers. We have immigration, new household formations. And so real estate is driven by people's lives. I have had, and we do see customers or clients say, well, I'm going to wait because my house is going to be it's going to be worth more or less next year and I'll get more money. The problem with that kind of rationale is, yes, you may get more money for the house you're in now, but you're going to pay more money for the house you're buying as well. And especially if you're moving up to a more expensive house, the actual dollars on the house you're buying are higher, and so you're actually losing some ground by waiting. What we did see last year, too, was buyers had such a challenging time getting a house. We have buyers that made 25 or 30 offers on different properties and were losing out on them because we'd have 10, 15, 20 offers come in within hours of a property going on the market. A lot of those buyers dropped out. And they said, well, I'm going to renew my lease for another year. I can't get a property. Yeah. Well, now that we're seeing this market normalize, it's a better situation for those buyers. Those buyers are going to have more choice and probably a little bit more room for negotiation. And so to address your question, what advice do we give people? Look at your individual situation. What are the drivers for you wanting to make that move? And look at the reality of the market. A lot of people right now are also saying, oh my gosh, 6% interest rates. And I have to tell you, in my time in the business, 6%, even, you know, we've been in the fives, those are historically low rates. It doesn't seem like it was that long ago people were paying, you know, 10, 11, 12% for interest rates on mortgage. So historically, if you put it in perspective, it's not a bad situation. And if the rates go down, you can always refinance. And so, you know, to those buyers that are saying, I want to wait for the rates to come down, well, you can always refinance.
Yeah.
Get the your dreams now. And for those of them that are saying, well, a market crash is going to happen because the headlines are all over the place. We don't have any data. We're not seeing anything on the horizon that is saying that values are going to decrease. We're certainly, I don't believe, going to see a crash. We don't believe that we're going to see any depreciation. The rate of appreciation, we believe, is leveling off and going to come back to normal, you know, 3 or 4% per year instead of the
maybe you do an ARM now, for that matter.
You can do all kinds of creative financing options to keep, if you, to keep your payment where you want to keep it. So, you know, again, my advice is find a good professional real estate person, explain your situation. They will guide you through this process.
Well, you have guided us well here. Laura Ellis, Executive Vice President and also President of Residential Sales at Baird & Warner. BairdWarner.com is their website. Interesting thoughts, Laura. I appreciate your visiting with us today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
It's also 1246. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Rush University's System for Health is expanding into Indiana. Cranes reports Rush and Franciscan Alliance have entered into a partnership to expand the availability of cancer and neuroscience care to patients in Northwest Indiana. The report says Rush will coordinate care, research, and education with Franciscan Health Hospitals in Crown Point, Dyer, Hammond, Michigan City, and Munster. Franciscan Alliance owns 12 hospitals. Several Chicago-area healthcare providers have recently expanded into Indiana, including UChicago Medicine. Caterpillar has reached a civil settlement with the Internal Revenue Service in a dispute over $2 billion the company owed in taxes and penalties. Cat hasn't said how much it paid the government. The settlement comes more than 5 years after agents raided the company's office in Peoria, removing documents, computers, and other evidence. A statement from Caterpillar says the company has been and continues cooperating with the government in the matter. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food and Steve Alexander.
And it's a Mr. Fizz Friday, and let's get to it. Right after, I thank Chevrolet for sponsoring the Business of Food, the Chevy Silverado HD in particular. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Here we go, Jim Fizzell. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, we talked about spring flowering bulbs a couple of weeks ago, but there's a problem for people that have very little space. How can you plant a bunch of bulbs like that if you only have a 10-by-10 garden out and back and half of it's taken up by something else? Well, there's one way to get around that, and to do this, you need to figure out the area that you're going to plant them in. You dig it out 10 to 12 inches deep and throw that topsoil over on a pile, on a tarp or someplace where you can get at it very easily. Then you plant the large bulbs, the tulips and daffodils, at the bottom of this pit. Space them normally, 6 inches apart or thereabouts throughout this area, and then cover them with soil, inch above the tops of these bulbs. Then you plant smaller bulbs on top of that, the narcissus, the crocus, and so forth. Cover with another inch of soil. Then you plant the smallest bulbs on top of that, things like the squills, the snowdrops, the muscari. Cover it all the way up to the top, water it in well. You may want to cover with chicken wire if you have a lot of squirrels in your area because they tend to want to dig these bulbs up. But the interesting thing is these smallest bulbs are going to be done blooming before the next layer is up. So shortly after the first ones are up, the second ones come up. And about the time they're done, the big ones, the tulips, daffodils, and hyacinths will come up. So you're going to have several months of bulbs in your garden, all in the same place.
Mr. Fizz, Jim Fizzell, and one final item today. A lot of farm towns have suffered with populations dwindling, Main Street businesses closing, but the small town churches have mostly remained the heart and soul and backbone of those communities. In Streeter, Illinois, the current Park Presbyterian Church building is 100, and there's a big party tomorrow, street fair, free lunch, and all sorts of fun, and then church on Sunday, where longtime members will be honored. The church was actually started 164 years ago when Streeter was a coal mining town known as Unionville and was described as a brawling and hard-drinking center of sin. Not sure how much of that's still going on there, but there's a big party Saturday. From the farm to your belly, today is National Wiener Schnitzel Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Jennifer Bell joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. The CMO at Let Us Entertain You Enterprises, L-E-Y-E, many of us know is the website.com. Jennifer, you guys have a new delivery plan. What's going on here?
Hi, John. Thank you so much for having me today.
Sure.
Yes, we decided that we needed to take care of our guests. And during the pandemic, of course, we all ordered more carryout and delivery. We were forced to. And when we took a look at our frequent diner members and our loyalty customers, they wanted the same experience online as they got dining in our restaurants. They wanted to earn points, use their reward dollars, and also use gift cards. So we worked really hard. We found a partner in DoorDash, and they actually provided us the software where our customers could order direct through us. So if you go to lettuce.com or our app and order directly through us, you can earn points, you can use reward dollars, and you can use a gift card. And we just provided this whole unified experience similar to what you get in our restaurants.
Who delivers the food then? Is that DoorDash doing it?
DoorDash does deliver our food, yes. But you're ordering directly to the restaurant. So it's coming right into our restaurants. We're seeing the order. We have control over the order and how it goes out the door.
It seemed to me that during the pandemic, the whole idea of these third-party delivery services took a hit. People felt that they were making too much money and actually hurting the restaurants. So how does this partnership work for you?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. So when the pandemic hit, we all started ordering more because that's really was the only option.
Yeah.
And we saw these third-party delivery organizations just grow. And it was frustrating for restaurants because there's high commissions. But DoorDash was smart. They knew that they had the vehicle in which they could allow restaurants to have a similar platform. But it would be direct, so for a first-party delivery rather than a third-party delivery. And we jumped on that, and we looked hard for a partner to do that, and DoorDash was ready to work with us. And they're a leader in delivery, and we're a leader in the food industry, and this partnership came, and we were really thrilled about it. And I can tell you the feedback from our guests. We're still seeing about 40% new customers every week since we launched. Our customers are happier. They know that they're getting food directly from us. We're not paying exorbitant commissions. And we're just thrilled to have this as an option for our guests.
Okay, Jennifer, so how do I sign up? What do I do?
Great question, John. You go to lettuce.com and you order directly from that website, or go to one of our brand websites. So you go to joes.net for Joe's Seafood Prime Steak. You could go to rpmseafood.com, or you can go to the Lettuce Eats app. And if you download the Lettuce Eats app, you become a frequent diner, and that's when you can earn those points on those orders. So we're much more now than just giving you good food and service. We're giving you value, and we're giving you reasons to come back and order, and order directly from us.
Chief Marketing Officer Jennifer Bell is doing a good job marketing this new
John.
Program at Let Us Entertain You. LEYE.com, of course, is the website. And Jennifer, I think I'll sign up. Good luck to you all. Thanks for joining
Please,
us today.
John. We hope to have you. Yes. Thank you.